it's exactly as I indicated, that we have on this issue a matter of diplomacy and a matter of the merits. We ask each nation on the Security Council to weigh the merits and make a decision about war and peace. And if anybody thinks that there are nations like Mexico whose vote could be bought on the basis of a trade issue or something else like that, I think you're giving, you engrave injustice to the independence and the judgment of the leaders of other nations. I'm sorry?
If you allowed me, the French press is quoting actually two different diplomats from the United States State Department, and they're highlighting that the United States is giving some sort of agreements or benefits to Colombia, Ethiopia, Syria, and other non-members of the Security Council.
Well, I haven't seen the story, and you already have the answer about what this will be decided on, but think about the implications of what you're saying. You're saying that the leaders of other nations are viable, and that is not an acceptable proposition. Thank you.
The voice you heard was the spokesman for the Liars Club. That was Ari Fleischer getting laughed off the stage at the White House. More on government liars in a few moments. This is Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth about the drug war. My name is Dean Becker. Our engineer is Steve Nolan. Cheryl and Tammy are here to man the computers and the phones. And in a few minutes, our guest for the evening, former DEA agent Cele Castillo, will join us. And we'll take your calls. I want to thank all the great listeners who donated to the recent fund drive for Cultural Baggage and the 420 drug war news. Now let's look at some of these the latest drug war news. Poppygate. The illegal drug of choice for the majority of Americans has once again been blamed for society's injustice. According to the U.S. government propaganda ads, apparently not only does marijuana help support terrorism, it's also responsible for teenage car accidents, lack of gun control, and pregnancy. All of this according to the Partnership for a Drug-Free America, who has recently purchased millions of dollars in cable advertising aimed at marijuana use. Over 250,000 people have died in alcohol-related accidents in the past 10 years. Approximately 25,000 are killed each year by alcohol. 500 people are killed each week in alcohol-related accidents. 71 people are killed each day in alcohol-related accidents. One American life is lost every 20 minutes to alcohol-related auto crashes. But instead of focusing on the real issue at hand, the Partnership for a Drug-Free America has decided to use marijuana as a scapegoat for society's problems instead of alcohol. Judge Francis L. Young of the Drug Enforcement Administration claimed that one would have to smoke 1,500 pounds, and that's maybe 20,000, 40,000 joints, within 15 minutes to overdose on the drug. Marijuana has never been proven to have directly caused any death. So here we are in the middle of a worldwide war of terror. Our government, however, finds it necessary to spend millions of man hours each year searching for that elusive pot seed, that roach, that bud of marijuana that will save the U.S. from destruction. Prime examples are being made every day. The arrests of sitting ducks is a lot easier for the government to tout as being on the ball. The arrests of Valerie Corral and Ed Rosenthal for providing marijuana for sick and dying people are obvious examples. This past Wednesday, the DEA, under the orders of U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft, seized tons and tons of bongs, pipes, and other tobacco glassware. They shut down the websites of 55 purveyors of these smoking implements. They called their bus Operation Pipe Dream, indeed. John Ashcroft defends their draconian tactics by saying it's federal law. Ashcroft knows they are making little real headway in finding the terrorists that live among us. So by arresting anyone and anything that relates to marijuana makes for easy statistics, which will help perpetuate funding for their low-impact law enforcement careers. So now we come to the real heart of the matter. When you support the drug war, you support terrorism. The drug war created black market enriches terrorists and gangsters. This prohibition market gives gangsters an unregulated market to buy drugs from terrorists and then sell drugs to American children. Now that's a quote from my friend Pat on the New York Times. He and another friend, Glenn, are setting out to expose the real harms of the drug war, the invasion of cheap, pure heroin to our communities as a result of the Afghan war. And they do call this Poppygate. It's really pretty simple if you just connect the dots. Dot one, Afghanistan has once again topped the list of opium producers. Dot two, as an example, in Pittsburgh, the price for a dose of heroin in 2000 was $25 a dose, and now it's only $3 a dose. The war on cannabis users is well documented and known to us all, from Ed Rosenthal and Operation Pipe Dreams to the insulting ads telling us that marijuana makes you pregnant. America's drug policy has resulted in a 90% reduction in the street price of heroin. Dot three, current Bush administration figures, Elliot Abrams, Wolfowitz, Pearl, Negroponte, Powell, and others, were, to say the least, implicated in Reagan's cocaine-Contra connection. Dot four, if U.S. border security is so lax regarding heroin importation, then how can we expect U.S. border security to stop anthrax or other similar substances? Dot five, if Americans get busted for growing controlled substances, they are subject to draconian forfeiture laws, jail, and fines. In U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, growing is openly tolerated. Dot six, so why do we use Roundup to kill crops in Colombia and apparently use Miracle-Gro in Afghanistan? If you see the penultimate hypocrisy, please contact your elected officials to express your concerns. These lying bastards pretend that marijuana is the root of all evil, busting sitting ducks who openly use, sell, or advise on marijuana, yet they allow their precious new democracy of Afghanistan to grow record levels of opium poppies, thus flooding the world market and bringing cheap heroin to your neighborhood, to your children. Hypocrisy is really not strong enough to express what these lying weasels are up to. It's really up to you to end this madness. These drug warriors will never willingly walk away from the money, power, and influence they receive from persecuting drug users. Never. To learn more about Poppygate, please visit our website at houstonnormal.org. Click on the link for Poppygate. How do you spell hypocrisy? Is it A-S-H-C-R-O-F-T? Please write that down and put it in a letter to your congressman and to the Houston Chronicle. Well, I guess you've got to hand it to, Ashcroft and his boys. They busted thousands of tons of bongs and rollers and detox kits. But I have to wonder what he'll do for the next escalation. Will he put an agent in every grocery store to bust everyone who buys a roll of toilet paper? Those little cardboard tubes make excellent bongs. Now let's bring in our guest for the evening. I'm sure he can provide us lots more light on this subject. He's a 12-year veteran of the DEA, having worked in South America, Central America, Mexico, and New York. He's the author of a great new book on the subject of the drug war, Powder Burns. I'm proud to welcome our guest, Cele Castillo.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, good evening, sir. How are you tonight?
Pretty good.
Yes, sir. I've been reading through, some of these cases you've worked on and so forth. Cele, tell them who you are.
Well, I'm a born and reared in South Texas, and educated myself here in South Texas. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I was involved with the Iran-Contra investigation on down in Salvador and Guatemala when I was down there during the Reagan years, fighting the so-called war on drugs, and it shattered my dreams because I really thought that I believed in God and country, and it turned out that I found out we were the bad guys.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. It becomes more apparent every day. Cele, I understand you worked in South America. You saw the Peruvians playing some soccer. Well, tell us about that little story, would you?
Sure. In Peru, we had a lot of Colombians working in Peru because Peru was a source country for cultivating the poppy fields.
Yes.
Money was so big that most of the Peruvians in Peru dealt in dollars. And, we were putting that dog and pony show trying to show the world that we were fighting the so-called war on drugs, when in fact the people that we were training, we were supporting, were sleeping with the Colombian drug traffickers. And the banks in Lima, Peru would go down to the Huallaga Valley to buy dollars for the banks. So that's one of the first times that I saw that that there was something definitely wrong with this so-called war on drugs.
Yes, I you know, here on the Cultural Baggage Radio Show, I often say, what's it going to take? What is the critical mass? Because we have judges and former governors and, you know, doctors, lawyers, you name it, and yet it still goes on. I mean, Saleh, did you hear about the bust of the 55 websites for selling bongs?
Yes, sir. Well, you got to remember, starting Monday, there's going to be three or four federal agencies that are going to go into Homeland Security, and they will no longer exist as individuals. That would be U.S. Customs, Border Patrol, and INS. And they're trying to put a dog and pony show for the people to tell them that, you know, they're working, they're still working on the so-called war on drugs. And you know, if you are involved in drug trafficking or using illegal drugs, then you are supporting terrorists. And that's the dog and pony show they're trying to show the American people.
Well, sure. And I mentioned earlier sitting ducks. I mean, these people are public. They're worldwide, and yet they want to count this as some great accomplishment somehow.
Well, it's not, and it never will be. The war on drugs will never be won, and the reason why is because of the economics situation, the money. Here in South Texas, we got more banks in South Texas than we do Circle K's or 7-Eleven. if we were to stop drug trafficking right now, our banking systems would collapse.
Yes, I understand. It's a big business. Some people who've run for governor have had their implications in that regard as well. I do want to alert the listeners. We're talking with Saleh Castillo, a former DEA agent, and we'll be taking your calls here in a few minutes. Our number, 713-526-5738. Saleh, I think about, you know, those years you spent in the DEA. You mentioned you wanted to work for God and country. That was your intent. What made you leave?
Well, the corruption within the agency, the agents get promoted by numbers. You know, how many informants you handle, how many cases you make, and that's basically your upgrade. And if you're going down, you go out to the streets and you arrest people for marijuana violations and so forth. And that's not right. And you know, and that's completely wrong. And that's what shattered my dream, because I really thought that I was fighting the so-called war on drugs, when in fact our U.S. government was heavily involved in drug trafficking back in the 80s. And I just was, you know, at first I was in denial, and secondly I was trying to justify what they were doing, and at the end of the day, it all went to their own pockets.
Yes, does it not involve kind of, I don't know, an ongoing reevaluation which drug cartel is allowed to prosper and which ones they go after, depending on cooperation with the DEA, that sort of thing?
That's correct. We did it with the Medellin cartels, with Carlos Slater and Escobar and so forth, and it was called the process of elimination. And when they took out the Medellin cartel, the Cali cartel came in and took over, and that's basically what it is. And the Cali cartels, they finance all political parties in those countries and Central American countries also. You know, the United States government has a lot to do with that. We go in and we buy the elections. We elect the presidents. They're going to play ball with us. And if they don't play ball, then we take them out, just like we did with Noriega in Panama.
Yes, it's...
Yeah,
it's so sad that we tout democracy and yet we're so quick to destroy it if it suits our purpose.
Yeah, basically what we built down in Central America, what is known as cocaine democracies, we go ahead and let them get involved in drug trafficking and with the carte blanche by the United States government, as long as it's a so-called democracy.
Saleh, you mentioned that the trafficking in the 80s. Can you give us some examples of some of the things you saw?
Well, I was stationed down at Ilopango Airport in El Salvador when the Contras were heavily involved in drug trafficking. And, of course, for you people that are not familiar with the Contras, it was the freedom fighters that were fighting the Sandinistas from Nicaragua, and the U.S. government was supporting the support of the Contras. And, you know, we had Felix Rodriguez, Oliver North, a lot of Abrams, who's now at the White House, Boyne Dexter, all those people were at a big, major operation going down there involving drug trafficking, sleeping with the cartels in order to finance the covert operations. And that's a fact. I mean, it's not even an allegation anymore. According to the Contra story final report, the United States government admitted that their sources were heavily involved in drug trafficking.
Saleh, I think it was last week, if not the week before, there was a report came out of New York that a couple of state agents had sued the federal government in regards to being dismissed or you know, moved to another job because they had blown the whistle on a, I don't know, it was the State Department and the CIA had a an arrangement with a Dominican drug gang, and that they were, in fact, you know, moving drugs into the United States, and the United States, rather than go to all the way to trial, paid these men $1.5 million to shut up.
Exactly. And what was going to happen there was that's how the government works. When they get ready to be exposed on corruption or illegal activity with the CIA, they'll just pay them off. And that's the problem with the government today. When we find corruption within the U.S. Attorney's Office in Houston or in South Texas, when an individual is arrested in a big conspiracy case and decides to fight the case, and as it turns out that the federal agents committed worse crimes than the defendants did, then they do try to buy them off or dismiss the case or you know, settle the case before it goes to trial on the grounds that they will not expose the government corruption.
Yes, sir. Saleh, I want to play a little track here. This is from Dan Burton, head of the U.S. government's cocaine committee. And go ahead and play that, Steve.
I want to tell you something. I have been in probably 100, 150 hearings like this at various times in my political career. And the story is always the same. This goes all the way back to the 60s, you know, 35, 40 years ago. But there's no end to it. And I see young guys driving around in tough areas of Indianapolis in cars that I know they can't afford. And I know where they're getting their money. And you know that he's got to be making that money in some way that's probably not legal and probably involves drugs. Over 70% of all crime is drug-related, and you alluded to that today. We saw on television recently Pablo Escobar gunned down, and everybody applauded that and said, that's the end of the Medellin cartel. But it wasn't the end. Yeah, there's still a cartel down there. They're still all over the place. When you kill one, there's 10 or 20 or 50 waiting to take his place. There's always going to be another person in line to make that money. And we go into drug eradication, and we go into rehabilitation, and we go into education, and we do all these things. And the drug problem continues to increase, and it continues to cost us not billions, but trillions of dollars. Trillions. And we continue to build more and more prisons. And we put more and more people in jail, and we know that the crimes that they're committing are related most of the time to drugs.
What's your comment to that from Mr. Burton there, Saleh?
You got to remember one thing. When he said that we took out Pablo Escobar and there was another one taking his place, you got to remember one thing. The Central Intelligence Agency, we have the best intelligence network in the world. Nothing moves anywhere in the world without their approval. So when you talk about Pablo Escobar, you talk about the United States government being involved in protection, transportation, so whatever, you know, because nothing ever moves without our government's approval. And that's why we flooded the streets. We you know, during the 80s with all the cocaine that came into this country, all the crack epidemic that occurred. Ricky Ross down in L.A., you know, cornered the market. And why? Because his sources of supplies were all assets for the Central Intelligence Agency. You know, we had agents putting their lives on the line, like Kiki Camarena. Kiki Camarena, you know, was tortured and buried alive, and the people who did it were CIA assets. That's one story that the government will not tell. But they even recorded his torture.
Oh, God.
So, I mean, how can you ask a DEA agent to go out there and put his life on the line when there's all there's another part of our government that's sleeping with the cartels?
It's outrageous. Say that I've got a long-distance caller here on the line. We're going to take him in just a second. I want to alert the callers, listeners, that we will be taking additional calls. Please give us a call, 713-526-5738. All right, John, we get John on the line. Hello, John.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I hear you. John, you have a question for Mr. Castillo.
Yes, sure do. He has really painted an incredibly powerful picture of the CIA, and my question is this, just how powerful is the CIA? And I have the feeling that they're exercising that power within this country domestically. We had a president that was an ex-director of the CIA. What is going on with this group? Are they taking over?
Well, they never left. It's basically the same group. If you see the same people, the same advisors that did for Bush Sr. are working for Bush Jr. at the White House. And same operation being run by the same people and running the covert operations. And absolutely, the CIA was heavily involved in drug trafficking. And basically, they're back. You know, we got more drugs today than we have 10, 20 years ago. And why? I mean, we spend billions of dollars in source countries in Colombia and Peru, and we can't even make a dent. So I think the answer has got to be treatment and prevention or whatever. But
how can we regain control of that rogue agency that seems to be
taking
over the world?
Because the American people, I hate to say it, are ignorant. They're in denial. They do not want to accept the fact that that it could happen. But now everybody's trying to open their eyes a little bit. And the reason I'm saying that is because 5 years ago there was an uncle or a far relative that was involved in drugs. Now we got one in every four in the family that uses drugs or is involved in drug trafficking. And parents now, it's affecting the families. Now, marijuana has never, ever, as you guys have always said, you know, does not cause any problems. Alcohol does, you know, you know, there's people are making money left and right, and especially the United States government.
Okay, let's wake them up.
Somehow.
Yeah, well, and I think this war that we're going on to Iraq, when the body counts, you know, you're bagging them, tagging them, then the people are going to realize that this is about oil and it's got nothing to do with terrorism.
I hope.
And that we've been taking the advice of grand liars all along. I hope that enters the picture.
Absolutely.
All right.
John, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
We do have another caller online. Ramon, I ask you to hold just a little bit, if you will. Please, folks out there, give us a call, 713-526-5738.
And I don't think they'd be refining coca and heroin in Colombia if they couldn't make any money. And I don't think that Al Capone would have been the menace to society that he was if he couldn't sell alcohol on the black market. And he did, and we had a horrible, horrible crime problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the people that are producing drugs over in Southeast Asia and Southwest Asia and in Colombia and every place else, they don't do it because they like to do it. They do it because they're making money. And the problem, in my opinion, is that at some point we have to look at the overall picture. And the overall picture, and I mean, I'm not saying that there's not going to be people who are addicted, and you're not going to have education and rehabilitation and all those things that you're talking about. But one of the parts of the equation that has never been talked about, because politicians are afraid to talk about it. This is my last committee hearing as chairman. Last time. And I've thought about this and thought about this and thought about this. And one of the things that ought to be asked is, what part of the equation are we leaving out? And is it an important part of the equation? And that is the profit in drugs.
Sally, that, again, that was Dan Burton on his last day as the chair of that committee. And it seems that people on their way out of certain offices can admit the truth. He was almost saying the word legalization there.
Exactly. But see, they will not legalize marijuana or any other drug because of the money. There's too much money to be made. And our government is totally, when you got Wall Street going down to Colombia and now for them offering the FARC organization down there to invest their money in Wall Street, that tells you right there and then that we control all aspects of drug trafficking in the United States, into the United States.
It's so outrageous, yes. We have another caller online. Let's go ahead and pick up Ramon. I want to ask you all out there, please call us, 713-526-5738. Hello, Ramon.
How you doing, Dean?
Well, good evening, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, yeah, I got a question for you. I was wondering, since the raids and the busts have been going on lately for the pipes and the bongs.
Yes.
I just wondering, do you think it's going to lessen our chances of legalizing marijuana?
Sally, you want to...
No, it will never happen. There's just too much money to be made on it, and if you legalize it, then there's no money to be made.
Already.
I mean, we've had it for years, and it's not going to happen. But it's got nothing to do with marijuana being an evil drug or anything else like that. It's just money is there to be made, and they're not going to go ahead and do away with it.
Political reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Economics. It's all about money.
Alrighty.
Exactly.
Well, that's about it.
All right. Thank you, Ramon.
You have a good one, Dean.
Okay. Sally, what about the human rights aspect of this? I mean, the DEA arrested, I think it was about 100 people for having bongs, and yet, you know, as far as I understand, they weren't, you know, advertising it as being for drug use. They were selling it as tobacco products. How does the DEA step over that line? How do they say, you know, somehow violate your civil rights and yet...
Well, see, that's the problem. They don't have to justify. This is the reason they do things like this, because they get away with it. Nobody has ever challenged them. And when you start filing a civil suit against them for civil rights violation, then they'll pay you off, you know, with the understanding that you're not going to expose the violation of your civil rights. And that's what it is. And I think when people start filing lawsuits against the government, they should go forward all the way to the wall with that suit to expose the corruption. And then you can sue agents as individuals also and lawsuits, and there will be accounted for. I mean, you know, they're just carrying this thing on too far to where they go out there and violate the civil rights. Just recently, a couple of weeks ago in San Antonio, Texas, DEA agents shot and killed that 14-year-old girl. I mean, once they shot her, they all ran to their trunks of the cars and put on their DEA jackets on. They were never, they never had them on. And believe it or not, they didn't even have an arrest warrant for the individual that they were looking for. It was just a typical surveillance, and we had a rookie kid out of Corpus Christi who shot that 14-year-old girl. And there's no justification. I mean, those are civil rights violations. There's no way in the world that they can justify what they did.
So eventually there'll be a payoff and a silent...
And that's why they continue to do this. They continue to raid wrong homes. They got informants who are not truthful, and they use their information to go out there and do whatever they want to do. And then if they do something wrong, they pay off the family. You know,
with
your guys now, when this operation Pipe Dream or whatever they call it, they're putting a dog and pony show for the government, and for the American people to say that there still is what's so-called war on drugs, and they're trying to put a stop to it. And you know, they cannot justify the fact that we've been fighting the so-called war on drugs for years and years, and we have not done it, you know, made a dent on it, and there hasn't been. And so there's something terrible wrong here. I mean, why are we spending billions of dollars and we can't make a dent?
It's just absurd. We do have another caller, and I want to alert the other listeners. Please give us a ring here, 713-526-5738. Now, I don't know if you were online, if you heard much of that story. I was talking about Poppygate, where they now have record levels of opium growth in Afghanistan now, and heroin's $3 a hit in America. I hardly call that a success. I'm wondering how... I don't know how they can justify the, I don't know, you say the money, and maybe I need to just stop and think about that a minute, but it's, you know, the war on marijuana, when they're allowing Afghan to grow this opium and bring it in here, you know, for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
It is, and you know, we don't have to go all the way to Afghanistan. We have it down in Colombia now who are cultivating the heroin, and in Mexico, you got to remember the black tar heroin coming into the U.S. from Mexico, and you know it's here. Every major drug is back.
Yeah, big time.
And better quality and less expensive than it was several years ago. Now why? I mean, you know, there's something definitely wrong here.
Well, yeah, I don't know. Let's let the next caller see if they can give us some advice. Harris?
Yes. I think this war on drugs, war on terrorism, is just another tool that the government can use to control individual people. The government, and there's a lot of information that our government was involved in 9/11. Our government is involved in drug movement, but yet it gives them the tools that they need to control individuals, take away an individual's civil liberties. And the more people they can control, that's what their intent is, to control individuals. And the more people they can have on probation, the more people they can have in the court system, you know, that's just two tools. The war on terrorism, the war on drugs, you can, you know, the war on seat belts, you name it. It's just a tool to control, to take away a person's civil liberties. Unless a politician respects and sees the importance of an individual's civil liberties, why are civil liberties important? If they don't understand why civil liberties are important, they are a part of the problem. But that's the intent. They want to control you. And they can use all kinds of tools to do it, but that's one of their biggest tools. I just want to hear what your thought is of that, sir. And I believe everything you're saying. I think you're on the right track, but I think you trust our government a little bit too much, in my opinion. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Harris.
Well, first and foremost, I do not trust my government. I think that our government is the enemy, and our government is a joke to now different foreign countries. You know, they stole the election. You know, people used to make fun of how corrupt Mexico was and how they buy the elections down there. And here we are, our own government doing the same thing. And, you know, it's just far-fetched how they try to win the American people. You got to remember, half of the American people did not vote for Bush. You know, so that tells you something. And now we have to sit here and take this arrogant precedent in doing in violating everybody's civil rights with the Patriot's Law, and now with the Patriot's Law 2 coming up and so forth. They're taking everything away. They are stumping our Constitution. They're doing everything that Hitler did during World War II. You know, we're going to start building concentration camps. They're going to start picking up people who are activists, who go against the government. How can the President of the United States say to you, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists? I mean, there's no line. There's nothing in between. I mean, I am not with them, and I am not a terrorist. I might be considered a domestic terrorist for not believing in what he believes, because he believes in he's ignoring the American people. He's doing things using breaking every law there is by for example not releasing the Reagan papers when it's mandated by the U.S. Government Congress to do so.
Right, he's hiding something.
He's hiding, and you know what? And you know what it is? I have those documents that he's trying to hide. I was able to obtain those documents. And every time I go out to different universities, I show those documents that he's trying to hide.
We need to bring you up here to Houston.
Yeah, because those are the documents that implicate his father in drug trafficking.
Yes.
With Oliver North. And you know, it's very well documented, you know, that our government ran drug trafficking in the 80s.
Yes, up through Maine, Arkansas, if I recall correctly.
In Maine, Arkansas, you know, they trained the contrabandists there in Mexico with the drug traffickers down in Mexico. They, in the ranches, they trained the contrabandists, the CIA, Felix Rodriguez, all the Cuban exiles, all those right-wing terrorists, I feel sorry for the people that got killed in 9/11, but what happened? How come the people, the American people, did not rise in support of the activists down in the 80s when over 500,000 Central Americans were murdered, assassinated by U.S. government death squads? You know, 500,000.
That's just outrageous.
And nobody ever did anything or said anything.
Right, and now we're worried about the Iraqis because we want the oil.
Exactly.
Yes, sir. Saleh, you earlier were talking about informants, and I want to play a little piece from one of my favorite attorneys.
Now, because of war on drugs and because of war on marijuana, our judicial system is once again tainted by informants at every level. We have more nomenclature for informants than any country in the history of law. We've got material informants, precipient informants. We've got reliable informants. We've got informational sources. We've got CIs. We've got participatory informants. We've got cooperating defendants. And it goes on, and we've developed a whole lexicon of legal principles that apply to revelation of informants and use of informants. But the bottom line, my friends, is that we swim in a sea of snitches nowadays.
That was Tony Serra, a San Francisco attorney. How many snitches are out there, Saleh?
Man, there are thousands of them. I want to say millions of them, if it's possible. But there is. And the reason why I know that is because informants will sell their mother, to stay out of jail. And the government knows they're lying about their testimony, yet they go ahead and let them do all kinds of illegal activity while they're out there and doing all kinds of stuff. So these informants have a carte blanche to be involved in drug trafficking and at the same time setting up innocent people, entrapping people, and violating their civil rights.
Thank you, Sid. We have a couple of callers online. Let's go to Sharon, line 3. Hello, Sharon.
Yeah.
Hi, Sharon. Do you have a question for Mr. Castillo?
Well, either a question or a comment. I know they say they can't legalize it because there's too much money to be made, but why not let the government legalize certain drugs, like, say, marijuana, and let them tax the heck out of it? And then if it's legal, there's not going to be that rush to make money illegally and kill people. I understand. If they make it legal, then all the bad guys can't make money.
Well, the problem there is that if you legalize it, then there's paper trail. Okay? Now you know where the money's going and where it's coming from. If it's illegal, then you don't have to show how much money you're making. And that's why we go back to the same story. It's about money. If you can make money without having to expose it, you know, everybody in the world knows that marijuana is harmless. The THC on it, I mean, all that crap that the government throws at you, they're all lies. And they don't want to start with legalizing marijuana because, well, the story will be, well, if you legalize marijuana for taxation, why don't you do it with cocaine? And there's where the banking systems will collapse on us.
The banking systems will collapse.
Absolutely.
If we legalize?
Our government is financed. Our whole banking system, Wall Street, is financed by drug money. I mean, we're talking about from China White to heroin, to cocaine, to everything. I mean, that our banking systems literally collapse. I mean, down here in South Texas, McAllen is about 200,000 people. We got a bank in just about every corner of a block.
Good place to launder them dollars.
Right across Mexico. We're 10 miles from the border. And you think that Mexico is poor? Absolutely not.
Well, it just seems like it would save lives.
They don't care about lives. All they care is about money. That's the problem. See, I understand what you're saying. But it's got nothing to do but anything but money. And that's it. And oil, of course, oil. Whoever controls the oil controls the world. And our last resources for oil is down in those pipelines down in Afghanistan. Then, of course, we got Venezuela's pipeline, where that's why we have problems going on in Venezuela right now. And the next country is going to be Mexico. So, you know, they're trying to control everything, and now Bush wants to drill down in Alaska again. Those national parks up there.
Yeah. Destroy our last great
wilderness. Yeah, exactly. And that's what it is. Whoever controls the oil controls the world.
Sharon, I want to thank you for your call.
Sure.
Do you have another question? Or?
No.
Okay.
Well, thanks.
We're trying to find you some answers. It was a great question. Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, let's go to Diane on line one.
Yeah, hi there.
Hello, Diane. Do you have a question for Mr. Castillo?
Yeah, I do. How do you convince people to speak out about these issues?
Well,
a lot of people are afraid. They won't come forward and speak out.
Well, you know what? You're right. They're afraid. But I think education is part of it. And when I do go lecture at different universities all over the country on this whole issue, you know, we get big group people. They're looking for people to talk about this, and you're going to have people, they're not going to be scared to get out there. I mean, you know, you put your life on the line. I mean, I did that when I was fighting the so-called war on drugs. Of course, you will be targeted by the government, and the first tool they use is the IRS. And you'll get audited, and, you know, whatever happens, happens. But you're going to have to need people to be out there and exposing this and get involved. See, the war in Iraq is not going to be fought in Iraq. When you see the body count coming in, it's going to be fought in the streets of our country.
Right.
And in universities.
Right.
Because that's what it's going to have to take. And yes, you know, you cannot compare patriotism from Vietnam or World War One or World War Two to what's going on right now, because these kids are going out there, mothers and fathers, and they're going up there to fight this so-called war.
Mm-hmm.
They will realize that it's not about terrorism; it's about oil. And when he releases that sarin gas, and it's going to be a devastation, then the American people are going to react.
Well, it's going to take something terribly bad to make them wake up.
But that's what usually happens. You know, people are in denial. They say, okay, you know, I'm going to serve my country. I'm going to go above and beyond the call of duty and give my life. You know, but when you got, you know, young men coming, you know, I mean, really destroyed by the poison that they're going to release down there.
Right.
It's really going to, the American people are going to say, well, what now? What do we do now?
Well, a lot of people say that there's nothing I can do. Nothing I can do will change anything.
Absolutely. And then you got no career to worry about. I mean, how many troops are we going to lose? I mean, yes, we take over Iraq. We got to be there for a minimum of 10 years.
Yeah, at least that. Yeah.
Rebuilt and so forth, and then you're going to have, as soon as we walk out, and every country that we've gone into, as soon as we walk out of that country, it falls right back into the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
we either have to stay there, or we just...
Exactly, yeah.
You know, the solutions are what's hard to come up with. What do you do to battle this?
You know, Israel has broken every United Nations resolution also, and, mm-hmm. and it's not, you know, they, you know, it's a, you know, who's got the biggest toys, and who's got the most money, who's supporting who. I mean, it's really a shame that we have to pay Turkey millions and billions of dollars so we can use their base.
Well, then
we got to pay Mexico now a lot of money. See, Mexico right now mm-hmm. is on top of the fence. Don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to vote for the resolution or not,
right.
United Nations. But now they're asking, well, how much money are we going to get? And that's basically what we're doing. We're buying off countries to vote for the war.
Sina, isn't it a bit like a bunch of gangsters getting together and dividing up the loot before they actually make
exactly.
the robbery?
They're cutting up the deal before they even get their hands on that money, and it's terrible. But see, everybody says, well, it doesn't, you know, it's somebody else's loss. You know, Mexico saying, well, they're the American people, and not realizing that a lot of the military services are mostly minorities now. I understand that the Marine Corps is made out of 35% of them are Mexican Americans in the Marine Corps. So you know, the Rangel out of New York City was trying to bring in a draft, but that's a no-no, because a lot of the upper class kids will get drafted, and they don't want that to happen. You know, it's always been that way, and let's all of us go to war, not just a particular group of people.
Well, you know, we were talking about, I was talking earlier about the government being liars, and a couple of things I heard just this evening, part of it was on Flashpoints, the fact that Newsweek has reported that the U.S. government knew and had documentation in 1993 that the Iraqis had already destroyed their chemical weapons, and that they've not provided that information to the rest of the world, and it was just reported by Newsweek.
Exactly, and the problem is, I mean, you got to remember one thing: we have the best intelligence network in the world. We know where everything's at. I mean, we got the technology for it, but it goes back to what I've always said: it's about the oil. I don't care if there's a resolution or not. He's going to go to war.
I think you're right. Well, yeah. Diane, thank you so much.
Okay.
We appreciate the call. Sally, I wanted to ask you, you know, just if you had a couple of thoughts you might want to relay, you know, independent of my questions to our listeners.
Well, basically, it's going back to the American people. They need to wake up and read between the lines, because I'm telling you, when somebody in the immediate family starts to die because of the stupidity that what we're doing, you know, it might be too late, you know, before it gets better, if it gets better. But we need to put a stop to it, and the way to do that is I strongly feel that, you know, when there's an injustice being committed, I feel it deeply in my blood, you know, that these things are happening because of what I went through down in Central and South America. But I strongly believe that an armed struggle is in order. For people who believe that they're losing their freedom.
Losing their country.
Exactly. I mean, you know, and you know, I've chosen to risk my life, you know, to demonstrate that what I believe to be real, and that is an armed struggle, you know.
And
maybe with pen in hand in writing about what's really the truth, and lecturing and talking to people, especially students, because you know, here in Texas, on this last election, we had 1% of the student population voted.
Mm.
I mean, I'm sorry, 5% voted.
That's
5%
still
of all the universities in Texas voted. I mean, what does that tell you?
They see no one to vote for, I think, might be the first guess.
And it was 15% the Latinos in Texas voted. 15%.
Again, no one representing their interests.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's why when we had Tony Sanchez running for governor against Rick Perry, I mean, everybody in the world thought it was going to be a very close race. And Perry just slaughtered the hell out of Sanchez because the Latinos didn't go out and vote.
Such a shame. Saleh, if folks want to get a copy of your book, Powder Burns, it's in certain bookstores, but they can also order it from you on the net?
Well, they can order it from me on the net at my email address. They can email me, and I'll send them a book. And it's powderburns@prodigy.net.
powderburns@prodigy.net.
That's correct.
I recommend it, folks. If you want to learn more about how about what's going on, please send him an email. You're also a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Tell the folks what that is.
Well, it's basically we go out and we talk about marijuana that's not harmful. It's, you know, since the marijuana laws have been in effect, nothing good has ever come out of it. You know, it's the same thing. Need to stop those civil rights violations, which they continue to violate the American people's rights. And I go out there and lecture. There's a lot of law enforcement police officers that believe that that's not marijuana is not harmful.
I want to thank you for being our guest. I hope you'll come back at a future time and we can discuss this further. There's a whole lot more that we just didn't get to.
I know.
And I appreciate you taking the time to stay up late with us, and we will bring you back.
Thank you, sir.
Saleh, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, we're going to go to Steve for a real quick activist corner.
Thanks, Dean. We've got a couple of things coming up. Actually, later on today, Cop Watch will be having a training session that's going to be over at the Montrose Library from 3 to 5 p.m. The Montrose Library is at 4100 Montrose, just a little bit north of Richmond. Also, you heard the PSA earlier about the backyard boot camp that's going to be happening here at KPFT. So if you get a chance, come on out for that. Coming up April 17th through the 19th, National Normal is going to be having their national conference Our own Texas Normal president, Mark Stepnoski, he'll be one of the featured speakers. That's going to be in San Francisco again this year. They had a real good turnout for last year's conference. I think Dean made it out there. But so that ought to be a real good thing to network with other activists. But also, coming up on April 20th, Houston Normal will be having their 420 Festival / Million Marijuana March. We'll have more details on that coming up. One thing that was mentioned, Barney Frank is introducing a bill that would allow a medical marijuana defense in a federal trial, something that Ed Rosenthal was denied. So if you can call the Capitol Switchboard, 1-800-839-5276, and let your reps know that they need to support this bill. Also, we had the Evict the DEA. I know we had mentioned a little bit about it before, but we had a real good turnout for that. All the activists came out, so I think we let Kay Bailey and Sheila Jackson Lee know that they need to stop arresting medical marijuana patients. They need to evict the DEA out of the states that, you know, have passed the laws. But I think that's about it for Activist Corner. Back to you, Dean.
Thank you, Steve. We've got just a couple of minutes left here. I wanted to just say that, you know, it's really up to you folks. It is. I mean, I come on here and I try to bring you guests that can tell you the truth and, you know, alert you to the fact that we're being bamboozled. We've been lied to every day by these cretin DEA creeps. They make a living lying to us. It's like we're peasants out in the field and they're just ripping us off every day of the week, folks. It's going to take you doing something. It's going to take you write a one paragraph letter, sum up the reasons why this drug war is crazy, and send it to your elected representatives. Send it to the Houston Chronicle. As far as reaching your elected representatives, I advise you to please go to our website, HoustonNormal.org. There's a link right there. You type in your zip code and it'll link you up immediately on how to write to your elected officials. And that's at Houston, NORML.org. I want you to hear a little bit here more about how you can learn more.
This is Mark Greer, Executive Director of Drug Sense. You're listening to Cultural Baggage on 90.1 KPFT in Houston. To end the drug war, visit MAPINC.org. That's MAPINC.org. Get active, stay aware, stay informed, and let's bring an end to this nonsense.
Okay, folks, you know, they have web pages that can show you how to write a better letter. They have more links on how you can, you know, reach other folks, how you can become a part of reform, how you can help to make a difference. And it's important, you know, I mean, we don't have to be afraid anymore. The problem is they have no more ammunition. They hide from the truth. They hide from the fact that they, you know, they're corrupt and bigoted. They cannot face the light of day. And if you can help shine that light on them, you can help to bring about the end of this crazy drug war. For my producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the Unvarnished Truth.